Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Today on The Grave Talks, These Walls Can Talk, a conversation about Ashmore Estates. Ashmore Estates in Ashmore, Illinois, was originally built in 1916 as a poor farm and later became a psychiatric hospital. It closed its doors in the late 80s and became a popular spot for people to sneak in and even vandalize. At some point, someone wrote on the walls by the front entryway, "These walls can talk. Open your mind and listen." It's the one piece of graffiti that owner Robin Terry didn't cover up because it perfectly describes the building. Ashmore Estates might seem empty, but there is a lot of activity within its walls. Just sit and listen, and the spirits will come to you. Today on The Grave Talks, a conversation about Ashmore Estates with owner Robin Terry.
This building was built in 1916, but there was another building on the property before this, and that was built as a poor farm. And it got to be so bad after it was there for 30 or 40 years. And they had a small fire there where a young girl perished in the fire, and it caused an extensive amount of damage, but they didn't fix it or didn't do anything with it for like 30 years after the fire. And that's when they decided they should tear it down. But there was no repairs done when the fire happened. They just went with it the way it was. And it was pretty sad, really. I mean, there was the original farm that was there. Was a large wooden structure, and then the fire happened and caused some damage to the place, and they didn't fix it. They just left it the way it was, and it really started deteriorating quite a bit. And there was vermin inside the building, inside the house. I mean, there's rats, mice, everything running all over the place in there, living in the walls and throughout the entire building. And the state finally had a And I always find this interesting. A lot of people don't think anything about it today, but I thought quite a bit of it back then, is that there was a lady that came down about 100 years ago, or a little over that, and she came in and said that this building needs to be torn down and replaced with another one. And so she had enough clout with the state of Illinois to get that done. So 100 years ago, women normally didn't have that type of
pull. Right.
But she did, and that's what happened. But she said at that time that the animals in the barns had better living conditions than the people in the house.
Oh, that's so sad, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty bad when you think that was happening. And then, but at the same time, I think that the county didn't pay any attention and didn't really want them to pay any attention to what was going on out there. And I think that happened, I think, a lot of these, because every county in the state had to have poor farms, or the almshouse, however you want to call them. Basically, it was a place for people to live because there was no public aid back then, and
right.
So they needed a place to go, and they didn't have anywhere to go, and that's why every county in the states had to have this facility. And they actually called them inmates, even though they weren't like locked up and things like that. They could come and go as they wanted to, but they had nowhere to go, and this was it. And it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, and that was done for a purpose. And that they didn't, I don't think that the county was really, I think they were ashamed of these locations and ashamed of the people that lived there, and they shouldn't have. I mean, it wasn't, in most cases, it wasn't their fault that they didn't have any money, didn't have anywhere to go. But they put them out there, and original pictures of this place there was trees out front of it, almost like they were hiding the building, you know, so that you couldn't see it from the highway. And they didn't want people to know it was there. And it's almost like they said they were ashamed of the location and ashamed of what it stood for. But it was pretty sad when you start thinking about, you know, the way that these people were treated and just basically tossed out there to fend for themselves.
And at the time, like you just mentioned, there wasn't a social services net for anybody. So there was no assistance, social security. So even sometimes these are people who, like, it could be a wife. Maybe her husband died or left her with the kids and she had no way to work and support her kids. So she might end up there. Maybe somebody with mental disabilities might end up there. It's just kind of a way, and especially the way you describe it, being out in the middle of nowhere, so people don't have to see them in town.
Right. They pretty much had like all walks of life out there. I mean, there could be anything from children to rapists in that building. Because
All together.
Yep. They lived there in the entire place together. They did split the floors up by men on one floor, women on another floor. They had separate dining areas. The porches out front were set up differently for women on one porch and men on the other porch. If you came there as a family, you were split apart. You weren't allowed to live with your you know, males and females. They could not, the family, husband, wife could not live together. The wife and the children would stay on one area and the men would, her husband would always, stay in another area. And it was just done like that. You know, you pretty much, like when you came out there, you had to play by their rules. And you know, the good thing about it in a way is that these people, when they came out there to live, they farmed and they took care of the acreage out there. And there was close to 300 acres on the farm out there. They took care of that. They grew their own vegetables. They grew their, you know, they took care of their own livestock. So unlike today, where basically people kind of fraudulently get into the system and just basically get a check, you know, from public aid to take care of, you know, their living. These people had to go out and work for it. And even though that I think that a lot of them were, I don't want to say mistreated, but let's just say forgotten, they ended up doing things to keep themselves happy and to make themselves so that they didn't have such a bad experience. I mean, you know, we've got photos of like a Sunday afternoon when they would have basically like their free time and they'd have like a picnic outside. And you could see the people that were sitting outside on the porch playing guitars, singing music, things like that, just enjoying life as much as they could. So I don't think that, I mean, it was a bad situation, but I think they made the best of a bad situation themselves and doing things that kept them, you know, entertained and that they enjoyed. And, you know, unlike today's society that are kind of like everybody's throats, I think these people kind of learned to live together. And they only had each other. They were the only friends they knew.
It's interesting because I think we look back on it with some judgment maybe, but then my town, like cities all over, we have a large homeless population and we don't do anything for those people. So at least I think the idea behind it was good, trying to give them shelter, a place to live, work, you know, and so they could be part of that community. So I think that idea was good. I think that with this particular case and with a lot of other facilities like that, they just, you know, finding good help and managing it was just really difficult.
No, I agree. I think it kind of came down to the superintendent and that took care of the place there. But there was, you know, we don't find a lot of articles that are written about the location because, as I said earlier, it was one that most of the general public didn't want anything to deal with, and the county pretty much just like this was the stepchild. They didn't want it, you know, they just like put it aside and let it go. But I did find an article years ago about a baseball player who was out there, and he was out there only for rehab because he didn't have money to go to the normal type of facility that you might go to for rehab. I think he was like probably in today's world, he was probably like a class A type of baseball player. He wasn't in the major leagues. Triple A, Double A. He was probably like the lower tier, the Class A, and he mentioned that that he enjoyed his time out there. That the food was good, and everybody pitched in and helped do the work and do the farming and all. So it was the only article I found from the inside looking out of the location, and because anything else that I find is all pretty much like negative type of stuff mm-hmm. that came before the county board. And it was just like, you know, bad things, how this was costing the county money, and this was, you know, they were doing this out there and all. And there wasn't a lot of positives to anything that was printed.
So how long was it used as a poorhouse slash, was it almshouse is what the other name for that?
Yeah, they call them almshouse or poor farms. I always kind of jokingly, when I take people on tours, and like, you know, that place that your grandparents or maybe even your great grandparents told you, if you don't stop this, you're going to send me to the poor farm. You're
that
there.
It.
This is it. And in fact, the Game of Life had that one spot where they sent you to the poor farm. And since, I don't know what year it was, but they removed that from the Game of Life, you know, the board game that I think Milton Bradley or whoever had.
Yeah.
But yeah, they removed that that poor farm part from there. And I found a couple of the older ones that have that. So, but yeah, the poor farm was out there, and that's what they called it at the time. And, you know, it was good to have them, but then it's nice to see them to stop. They quit about 1959 is when public aid kind of came in and took over and started doing things differently. So it pretty much all shut down right in that time frame.
And then did they set up a psychiatric hospital after that?
Right. Yep. It became it was a psychiatric hospital and a kind of a home for aged living and some things along that line. It was, a lot of people say it was an asylum. It was never an asylum. There's a big difference between the hospital and the asylum. The asylum is pretty much a place where you take people to, and I don't want to say drop them off, but then they have some mental issues that are probably never going to be able to be fixed. And so they just like set them there and put them in the building, and that's it. Whereas a hospital, obviously, it's like any hospital, they were trying to help people. And so they would bring them in there and try to make things right for them and see if they can't do things. I mean, they did all kinds of procedures, some we probably don't even know about. You know, but there was they had electroshock therapy treatments that they did out there. And we know the area where they did those. And I'm sure there was a lot of experimental stuff that was happening out there. But that, you know, they carried on through the hospital, and it went through a couple different stages where it was kind of a private hospital, then it became a public hospital, and it kind of moved back and forth, you know, quite a bit of time there. It was, it basically ran until, into the 70s and 80s. You know, when they finally shut it all down.
Then it did sit empty for a while, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. It sat empty for about 12 years. And was, you know, at that time, you know, became kind of, you know, as a lot of people call it, abandoned, and which a lot of people think that abandoned buildings are free grab. You can go in and wander through an abandoned building. It's like, no, that's still trespassing. And you can't do that. Just because the building's no longer being used doesn't mean it's free game to somebody to wander through and do anything with it. But yeah, it became empty for about 12 years. There was a gentleman that was going to build a house inside there, but the vandals out there got to be so bad, he just gave up on the idea and said, forget it, and just decided to sell it.
That's really sad. Like, he was going to renovate the building and couldn't keep the vandalism in check and just gave up. That's sad.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's a pretty good-sized building. It's about 15,000 square feet. And he wanted to turn into his home, but, you know, he'd get windows to put in or start doing certain work in there, and then the vandals come out and destroy it. And so he finally just like, you know, he couldn't keep up with it. So he just like, that's it, I'm done with it, and sold it. And I think it was like, back like 89 or something like that time frame or so when he sold the place. And 98, actually, 98 is when, got my numbers backwards there, 98 is when Arthur Coakley bought the property to renovate it to his house, and then couldn't do anything with it. And he ended up selling it in about 2000, early 2000, 2005, 2006 to Scott Kelly. So he could turn into basically a haunted attraction, is what he ended up doing. He opened it up as a haunted house.
Okay.
When he bought it, that was his whole idea, was doing that. And I've known Scott for quite a while. And but yeah, he built a haunted house attraction, and it was pretty popular, you know, with everybody. I mean, they kept the haunted house going until he sold the property in the, you know, basically at auction. And it was probably, I think it was 2012 when they had the the damage out there, or the 2013 when they had the wind damage out there, and that's when he sold the property. And a gentleman bought it and was going to turn it into his own haunted house. But Illinois decided that they were going to make some little stiffer things on haunted houses, and he had to have fire system in there for water and sprinkling system, and he just didn't want to put the expense into that, which I can't really blame him. But so he pretty much like just had it for about 1 year and decided to sell it.
And was he renting it out for paranormal investigations too?
He didn't do a lot of that. Scott was actually Mormon, and he did not believe in the paranormal. So he didn't do much with that. He finally started letting some do it, and they came in, did some investigations in there. He didn't really want anything to do with the paranormal. It wasn't his cup of tea, and nothing there wanted to do it. He was really into the haunted attraction, the jump out scares and things like that. And that's what he really wanted to do with the building. The other gentleman, that I actually bought the building from, he started another haunted house in another town, and that was a very short lived. It was like 1 year, and he was one and done. It didn't go well for him.
So when did you and your wife buy the building?
We had I went over there like in 2012 and with a friend of mine to help him with a public investigation he was doing. And I was in the building, and I thought it was really just a really cool building, except when we were investigating in there, there was areas that there were so many people in the location that you didn't know they were there because there's too many haunted items, too many props were set up. And so you'd have six people in a room. Is somebody over there? And you're like, yeah, I'm over here. And somebody's like, yeah, I'm over here. I'm like, forget it. I can't investigate this. You have no idea where anybody's at. So so I just kind of went and sat in my car. And then it was the following, after that year, the roof blew off because of the tornado. And that's when Scott sold it and Robert bought it. And he'd been out there working on it. And then he decided that he was going to build this haunt in Indiana. Well, we ran a haunted house attraction here in my building. And I live in an old movie theater, and we ran a haunted house here in the basement. And so I put our props up for sale because I knew the sprinkler system situation was coming about. And so Robert contacted me about possibly buying our props. And he came over and started looking at them. And we were telling him, I said, I live in this place. He said, it's an old movie theater. I live here anyway. So it's not a problem. We're going to be around. And so he asked me if I take him on a tour of the house. And so we did. And we were upstairs, and I asked him, I said, so what are you going to do with these props? He's like, well, I'm building a haunted house in Indiana. I'm like, oh, that's cool. I said, have you had experience with that? He's like, well, I own one now. And I said, where's that at? He said, Ashmore Estates. I'm like, I said, I've been there before. I said, what are you going to do with that location? And he said, I'm going to sell it. And I'm like, really? And my wife was over there cringing because she knew that I had mine already. So we made a plan to go out there the following week. It was Easter Sunday weekend. We went out there on that Saturday and wandered through the place. And there was something about it when I walked on the second floor. There was something that I just got this feeling. And I'm about as sensitive as a rock, as they tell people. And there was something about that second floor when I walked through it that it said, there was people kind of talking to me. And it was more like help our building. And I got the feeling that the people that were still there, the spirits that were in the building, the energy in the building, they were content with what was there. They weren't content with their building, because the building, when it was originally built, was a gorgeous brick building. When after it was rebuilt, it was a beautiful building, trestle floors, concrete and the masonry type walls with brick exterior. A huge, huge roof on top with dormers and two nice porches outside. I mean, it was a gorgeous building, but it had really just deteriorated so bad over the years from just neglect. And then the roof came off of it. And there was no roof on it when I bought, when I looked at the building. The roof was gone.
Your wife was probably like, Robin, what are we doing?
Well, actually, on the way home, we were kind of quiet. I had a friend of mine with us, and I said, because there's no power to the building either. There's no windows, no power, no roof, no electricity, no bathrooms, really no reason to buy it. And but I had a friend of mine, I asked her, I said, come with us and take a bunch of pictures. And so she shot like 400 or 500 pictures, I think, of the place. And on the way home, my wife like told me, she's like, well, you might as well just buy it. I'm like, what? She's like, you might as well buy it because I know you're thinking about it. And I said, yeah, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done. And he says, she's like, well, it's not like you haven't done that before. So, so I decided to buy it. And I live 2 hours away. So it's not like I can just jump in the car and run over there in the afternoon and do some work on the place. So it was, you know, we decided to do it, and we bought it. I forget the exact date. I think it was like May 3rd or something like that. And of 2014? Yeah, 14. And 2014. And I was on Facebook that day, and I was over there. We made the closing done at the realtor's or a attorney's office. And I had told a few people that I was looking at buying this. But I kept it kind of quiet just so nothing would go wrong with everything with the process. And so I posted on Facebook, the only thing cooler than owning one haunted location is owning two. And so I posted a picture of Ashmore Estates. And about that time, my phone blew up. And all kinds of people are like, you bought Ashmore Estates? And I just closed on it. And so we are fortunate that, you know, because I don't like asking for help from anybody. But all kinds of people were asking us, hey, can we come over and help you with the place? Because we'd love to get involved with it. So I'm like, sure, you know, if you want to. So we ended up with people. I mean, that I bought on a Friday. On Saturday, I had three or four people come over to help us clean the building out. And there was at one point we had 23 people showed up one Saturday just to help us with the location. And we got things done a lot faster than I ever expected to do. I was hoping I could have it cleaned up so that people will go through it in September. And we had the roof and everything on it by June.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, how much help we had, you know, coming out and just, I mean, and the place was in bad shape, but it was repairable and fixable. It just had to have somebody that's willing to do it. And I didn't have a problem with doing the work. It was just a matter of, you know, the time frame, just getting over there and doing it. So, it was nice having some friends come over to help and some people I never met that we become friends out of it and everything. So but yeah, it's been fun. It's been a fun project. It's been a load of work, but it's been, you know, kind of personally rewarding as well.
I want to circle back to something that you said when you first went in the building, and you said you're as sensitive as a stone. Was it like a voice that you heard that said, help our building? Or was it just an overwhelming feeling that you got when you were there?
Yeah, that day it was just a feeling. And you know, it was just something that walked through that floor that I kind of looked around and it was kind of sad because you just felt like the people that were the energy or the spirits that might still be in that building were just being neglected still. You know, I mean, even 100 years after they were there, they were still being neglected,
right?
Because the windows were covered up. They were boarded up. They couldn't see out. There was one window in the entire building out of like 80 windows that was open that had glass in it that you could see out. Every other window was boarded up. And I think that's what a lot of it was. And, you know, there's so much stories about the dark history and things like that in that building. And I always tell people, well, if you sat in a building for 100 years, how do you think you would feel with no windows? You know, you couldn't see out or anything. And like, it was almost being like in a solitary confinement, you know, for you know, the time frame that building was shut down in 59. And, you know, it had windows and everything in 59. But when it was shut down until, you know, basically when I bought it, it was pretty much boarded up, you know, for almost, you know, 60 years. And so it was, I think that's what the sad thing about the whole thing was. And I think when, you know, and I had people that were there that investigated the building before I bought it, that came back after I bought it, and they said, you can feel the difference in this building. You can feel the difference in the energy in this building. It's like it's a lot happier now than it was before you owned it. And which is kind of personally gratifying in a way, because that's what I was hoping to do. We were hoping to make some changes like that.
And, you know, when you think back on the people who were there, you know, it wasn't like most people went there because it was like an awesome place to go. They went there because they had no other place to go. And I watched a video with you in it, and I think it was in newspapers. They referred to people living there as the friendless, which I thought was so incredibly sad to refer to anyone as friendless. You know, but a lot of these people had no one.
No, and that's what happened with most of them. And some of the women that were there and had children, they were probably, I don't want to say picked up, but probably moved in with maybe some family relatives or something like that at some point just because of the children. But like most of the men that lived there probably had nowhere to go because nobody was going to take them in. You know, they didn't have, you know, it's a lot easier. Most people would, you know, would take in the female and their children before they ever take a male in.
Right.
So I think that they were stuck there, you know, more so than most of the females. I think they probably worked their way out. Even even Elvis Skinner, who died in the fire from the original fire there, who died from burns from that fire. Her mom, when she died, her mom married a gentleman just so that they wouldn't have to bury her in the poor farm cemetery. And so they got married and they buried Elva in the city of Ashmore so that they could, they have a regular headstone or tombstone there for her and everything. And she wouldn't be living in the, buried in the poor farm cemetery, the pauper cemetery.
And which is on the grounds, correct? I mean, because people would die in the building and a lot of people did. And they had to be buried, so they were close by?
Well, there's actually the cemetery for the poor farm itself is about, not quite a mile straight across from the building. It's in fact, you can go on Google and you'll find the Coles County Poor Farm Cemetery on Google out there in a field. And there's a lot of headstones. We've got pictures of the headstones that are out there. There's been talk that there was a cemetery on the grounds. We've not been able to find any documentation per se with that, but we feel pretty comfortable that there was bodies buried on the cemetery or on the grounds, just maybe not recognized, and they just maybe there just because they were buried there. And there's a lot of, there were some fields out back where there's a lady, Nancy Swinford, who was not related to Paul, who bought the building for the hospital's situation that he was doing. But Nancy, her dad was one of the last superintendents, if not the last superintendent at the building. And she told me that she would see at night, a lot of times she would look out her window in the bedroom upstairs on the third floor, and she'd see somebody out there digging in the fields behind the house. And behind the building, and she never could figure out why they were out there digging at night until she got older and realized that they were probably burying a body out back. But there's a there's an episode coming up, I'm not sure when this will be out there, but October 22nd, Jack Osborne is coming out there and doing a TV episode. So if this is before that, great. If not, have to look up and find it through Travel Channel, the old, you can probably go back and watch it there. But he's going to do some different type of investigating, and I think it'll be interesting to see how he comes up with some stuff. So that'll be a fun one.
Oh, that'll be really fun to watch that. When you bought the building, did you know that you were going to use it for paranormal investigations primarily?
Yeah, when I bought it, I had no intentions whatsoever of doing a haunted house, because I honestly think that that's just not right for the building. I think you're kind of like just, you know, using the building just for that. And I just didn't feel comfortable with it. So because I've been doing paranormal investigating myself for about 20 years. And so I've got tons of equipment. And I thought, you know, it'd be kind of cool to own another location that's haunted and to do some stuff with. So that's why I decided to do that. And we always anticipated just doing nothing but the paranormal with it. That was the whole idea, was just to do that. And I was kind of worried in a way, because when we started cleaning everything up in there, we threw away tons of stuff, and mostly props from the haunted house and everything like that. And I was always kind of like, well, you know, we've cleaned this out so much, I don't want to say cleared spirits out, but maybe it's just not as creepy as it was when it was a haunted house. But Nick Groff came out in 2015, I think it was May of 2015. He did an event out there, and we were walking through the building, and I said, so it's probably not as creepy as it was when you're out here with Ghost Adventures. And he told me, he said, actually, I think it's creepier. I'm like, why? He said, because you can see in every room now. And he said, before you had no idea what was back there, but now when you come into a room, you can see everything. And he said, if something moves in this room, you're going to see it. And it was, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. And it's been kind of crazy out there with the activity that's going on. And we get a lot of people come out there and ask us, you know, about the activity, what's the hotspots, things like that. And honestly, I have no idea. Because I always tell them, I said, when you came on the property, that started. And because the activity in this location can be anywhere. It's not like a fishing lake where we've got, you know, tree branches set up so the fish all stay in one spot. So the spirits all stay in this one spot. I said, they can roam the building wherever they want to. And we don't have anything set up to try to contain them in a certain area.
Do you find when you go in the building that the energy kind of changes day to day even?
I think it does, especially. Yeah, it doesn't with me a lot of times, because I think, you know, with going out there and working in it for, you know, 9 years and being in the building and doing things all the time, I think when I walk in the building, the spirits in the building are like, ah, it's just him. And so you know, they don't pay attention to me. But at the same time, they know I'm there, because I've had a lot of people that have been out there. Doogie from Tennessee Ray Chasers was one of them. And I got a friend of mine, another friend of mine, who was doing a spirit box session one afternoon. And he said, so do you know who owns this building? And it said Robin.
And oh, like, that's cool.
Where's Robin now? And they said, on a tractor. And he said, I looked out the window and said, this is a daytime investigation they were doing. He said, you were driving down the road on the tractor, doing some project out there. And Doogie ran the same thing. He asked him, he's like, you know who owns this building? And it said Robin. And he's, you know, and he asked, where's Robin now? He's like, downstairs. And Doogie came downstairs and he opened the door, walked in the room, and he turned as white as a ghost. And I said, what's going on? And he's like, man, how long have you been here? I'm like, a couple hours. And he's like, because I was upstairs, I hadn't seen you. I've been here an hour. He said, but I asked them, they told me you're down here. I'm like, I'll play the game. He said, I'll go downstairs and see if I can find him. And he said, here you are. He's like, they knew exactly where you were. So I think they kind of keep track of you around there a little bit.
There was one thing that you said in the video that I watched on your website, and it's a really good video. Check out the videos that are on the website. But I wasn't sure if it was written someplace in the building or if somebody written it on the walls, but it said, these walls can talk, open your mind and listen. And I was like, that's a really cool thing, like, because that whole building can talk if you just sit and listen to it.
It is actually, it's right at the, on the front door, it's at the bottom of the stairs on the left side. And I got rid of most of the graffiti in the building, except for that. And because that's the perfect thing. I mean, it's the perfect thing. It's like, you know, that you read on there. It's like, these walls can talk, open your mind and listen. And that's one thing I tell people when they come in the building, like, you don't need to wander all over the place and, you know, like you're out on a fishing trip and just running from spot to spot to spot trying to, you know, pick something up. I said, find a comfortable spot, sit down, and just let the building come to you. I said, because a lot of times it will. And, you know, you'll hear things or you'll see things or feel things. And I've been out there working numerous times, especially on a Sunday afternoon, and have all kinds of, you know, I hear voices. And it's, I'm not trying to investigate. I'm working on stuff. Not even paying attention to my surroundings whatsoever and just working on things. And I'll hear voices, even full sentences and whistling. You know, Destination Fear was out there and they heard whistling. And I told Dakota after the episode aired. In fact, I think I was on the a live podcast with him that night after the episode. And I told him, I said, you know, we've heard that. I said, you're not the first ones that heard that whistling. I said, Richard Estep and Brad Kling and I all heard that out there one afternoon we were out there. And I said, so, yeah, that's not unusual. And voices, you know, I've heard full sentences from people talking inside the building and all. So it's out there. It's just a matter of listening. And most of the time that I've heard things, it's all been during the day. And, you know, contrary to popular belief and watching some of the shows, you don't have to do the investigations right at night. You can do them during the day. And it's just as active, if not even more active during the day than it is at night.
And that wraps up part one of our conversation about Ashmore Estates. You can get more information about their paranormal investigations and more at their website, ashmoreestates.net. Or you can visit their Facebook page, just search Ashmore Estates. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, you can become a Gravekeeper. Sign up on Apple Podcasts and try it for 3 days free, or you can also go to patreon.com/thegravetalks and find everything there all ad-free. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games and it's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Terms and conditions apply. Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car looked in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Ready to put a little spin on your day? Then check out Chumba Casino's new online social casino game, Ryan Seacrest 10K Ways. It's free and packed with 10,000 ways to play, only at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.